This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Welcome to Trapping Across America. This is your host, Clint Locklear. We're going to talk about trapping and different questions and just different things that the manly men of America seem to appreciate. So we're going to jump into something I think, guys, that is really, really, well, there's two things that's really, really cool. Now, most of y'all know that I was in the military. I was in the Army. I was in the 101st Airborne, and I was in the 6th Infantry Division up in Alaska. And, you know, when you go in the military, you go through your training, which is basic and AIT, and they beat you up a lot and kind of try to change the way you think, and they... They beat in a lot of muscle memory to you on, you know, ambushes and how to take action if coming under fire and all that type stuff. But then when you get past that, you go into either you go to your unit or you go to schools. And I was lucky enough or blessed enough or cursed enough, however you want to look at it, that when I got out of my AIT, I went into airborne school at Fort Benning, Georgia. So I got jump wings. So when I'm getting ready to say that beavers have jump wings, you'll know what I mean by that. You know, because this is a really cool story for me that was sent to me from a friend from Ohio. Now you can find this on Boise State Public Radio. If you go to there, it's a .org website. You can put in parachuting beavers. And what is really cool to me about this, besides what they did, it shows a difference in America that we need to get back to. There was a problem. They needed a solution. They understood, even a government agency back then understood that there was cost analysis to do something, and they went about actually doing something on a less cost analysis basis, which could you imagine that today? Never see it again, probably, as long as we're alive, because it's just spend money, spend money, spend money. Republicrats, they just love spending money. But back in the day, Boise had a problem with too many beavers that were coming in contact with where people started developing houses and developments and stuff like that. This is more than 60 years ago. Now what they did, they had these beaver. They didn't want to destroy the beaver. They could see, and guys, you know, beaver trappers, you know this. You go up to a swamp that's been there for years. You've got an ecosystem there that is flat amazing. Muskrats show up, otters show up, you've got more predators around because you've got more prey around, the vegetation's more lush, everything like that. Beaver are amazing architects in nature. So sometimes, you know, you've got to move beaver or kill the beaver or shoot the beaver if they're causing problems and you don't have a whole lot of actions you can do. And unfortunately, the way that our laws are written today in most places, you go transferring beaver from one place to the next, you got a liability issue, because if they start plugging up someone's road or culverts or flood somebody's house or something like that, they're going to start looking for a scapegoat in our modern day society, and it could be the trapper. So you need to keep that in mind. So sometimes you can't do what I'm getting ready to tell you about. But this is just really cool. Just after World War II, the people had discovered what a beautiful place Macaulay and Paylet Lake were. Idaho Fish and Game says people started building homes, and in the process kind of moved into where beavers have been doing their things for decades and centuries. Beavers became a problem. Elmo Heater, H-E-T-E-R, worked for Idaho Fish and Game in the Macaulay area. He had experience with beavers, and it was his job to find a solution. He knew that the Chamberlain Basin was a perfect place for the beaver. The animals would be away from beaver, and their natural activity would be beneficial to the habitat there. The trouble in the Chamberlain Basin is it is now Frank Church River in a number of wildlife areas. There was really no good way to get in there, and there was no roads. So I'm not going to read this whole article because it's quite long. But they wanted to get the beavers there because they knew that they were good for the habitat. It was almost impossible to get in and carry these beavers. I mean, can you imagine trying to carry beaver through wilderness to turn them loose somewhere? I mean, that would be an absolute nightmare. Now, this is where Americans used to think outside the box. And they used to be very creative in government responses to stuff. And this was, I mean, this is outstanding. Heter knew there's a surplus of parachutes from World War II, and he had an idea. What if we drop beavers from an airplane into the backcountry? Sounds crazy, so crazy. It was actually a question on a recent episode of NPR. Now, he started this program, guys, thinking, okay, I'm going to build like these wicker baskets. And just like anything you're going to do in trapping, ideas a lot of times come crashing into a wall once they hit reality. And this is what happened to him. And this is why you've got to test anything if you're ever going to put it on the market. He built these wicker baskets. And before the plane would even get off of the runway, apparently, the beavers would chew through the wicker baskets. And he had beavers running around inside of an airplane. Not the best thing to do. So then he stepped back and go, well, we just can't put a parachute harness on them or anything. So they got to be enclosed in something. And if you've never been around airborne operations at all, you know, we can drop a tank, a Humvee, pallets of food, ammo, stuff like that. You don't need a person if you rig up something with a static line jump system for someone to pull a ripcord or guide or anything like that. So what he did, and it's really ingenious, and if you go to the website, you can see kind of what he did. He built a box, and it had holes in it for air holes, but it was designed when it hit impact on the ground that it would shatter. Now, when it shattered, the beaver could go about and do their thing. And if you've never been around, if you're not airborne yourself, I don't think a beaver would hit the ground very hard at all. An average man that weighs about 200 pounds, when you jump out of an airplane with combat gear on, you hit the ground at the velocity of about jumping off a two-story building. That's why we had we learned how to fall and roll and all that type stuff. But when I also had women that went through airborne school for some reason, because they were never at that time in combat units to actually jump anywhere, but we did have girls that went through airborne school with us, and you got a girl that weighs 90 pounds, and you know, you had guys like me that were coming in like jumping off a two-story building praying we didn't break our legs and we got the roll right, especially at the beginning. And these girls would land and they wouldn't even fall over, they would just kind of come down so gently because of their weight that they could stand up. Then the black hat run over and push them over and tell them they still had to do a PLF, parachute land and fall. So these boxes, because a big beaver weighing 60 pounds, you know, an average beaver probably weighing 30 pounds, they're not going to hit the ground that hard. So he's got this box and he's got these holes and he's got all this stuff in there. And they're going to drop them out of this airplane just like you would a military action, to get beaver where they're going to be helpful and not in people's way. So they rigged up 76 parachutes with these boxes and dropped them into this basin. And only one of the beavers didn't survive. And I can tell you, if you drop 76 soldiers, one of those is not going to be combat effective, because he's going to hurt something, break something, stab something, whatever, because it's not an exact science by any stretch. So 75 out of the 76 beaver made it. And then they went and created some of the most amazing habitat in that part of what is now known the largest protected roadless forest in the lower 48. To me, this is just cool. You know, it's just, somebody had to trap these beaver. Somebody had to figure out how to rig them up to a parachute. And then they went out and dropped them in the backcountry of Idaho to build some amazing habitat. And you know, and they're saying today that a lot of those beaver are still there. I mean, not those beaver, but their generations later beaver are still there. So if you're ever in Idaho and you're out in this area and you come across a beaver dam, I mean, just say a little hoo-ah to yourself about it, because there's genetics in those beaver that got jump wings. I mean, how cool is that? And that's, I'm not going to go very off on a tangent on this, but when people get fired up about trappers, it took trappers to catch these beaver, to save these beaver, to build the habitat that people like to go and watch wildlife as it's a movie or something. Trappers did that. Trappers are the reason we have otter all over the country now. Trappers are also the reason that most animals are in the zoo. Trappers, you know, by understanding traps, have come up with ways when you're in Maine or somewhere, or in Pennsylvania or out west, and you have bear problems, using concepts of trappers and even hiring trappers is how you fix those problems, sometimes without destroying the animal. Trappers have a lot more value in our society than people believe. It's also really deep in our history that people are no longer taught or understand of why we moved west and the people that got us to go there. It was trappers to begin with. So it's not just what we're doing now. It's part of a long lineage, guys. You should have tremendous amount of pride to be part of a brotherhood that helped establish America. Help save animals sometimes, protect people from animals other times, keep populations and diseases in checks at other times, and even goes as far as catching beavers to drop them out of airplanes to build habitat. Now, to me, that is a cool story. That really is a cool story. Now, the other cool thing I want to talk about before we get into some of the more meat of this stuff is, you can't see it because this is a podcast, but this that you hear right now is a really, I have to admit, a cool trap modification. It is, I'm holding a MB550. It looks like a newer generation from the dog. Chip from Mississippi sent this down to me to look at. I personally am not a 550 fan, just because of, just not, you know, I'm just not. I mean, I think they're a good functioning trap. I think they hold well and stuff like that. I mean, I'd rather stick with my long springs and my number three Bridges Doglers and Montanas and stuff like that. I don't have anything against the trap whatsoever. I think it functions fine, does a very good job for what it's made. And Expand the Pan is Chip's business, and he sells them through Jeb, which is one of our sponsors. And I would say, if I was guessing, and I'm not sure there's a way to find this out for sure, but if I was a guessing and a betting man, I would say the most popular trap that is bought and used by guys that trap for more than a couple of years, hands down across the country, just from what I can see online, is the MB550 from Tim Caven and his son in Minnesota Trapline. It is a smaller trap, as most of y'all know. It is, it's got very well laminated jaws. It can be four cold. They come two cold, which is, you know, pretty much all you need in most parts of the country. The way the jaws and stuff tips are bent up, it's good. And it's a quality trap. And I think that has a lot to do with a lot of the reasons it's so popular. In the jaws, it allows people to not have to goof around with this trap, and it's one of the few traps you take right out of the box and you go trapping with it. One of the issues with this trap is it's a smaller trap and it's got a small pan on it because it's a coil spring and the levers come up. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I never really got into them. After seeing this, I may have to play around with a couple of dozen the way this is modified from Expand-A-Pan. What they've done there is they've got a expanded pan to really fill up the jaws of this trap. And it really jumps up the kill area and cuts down on the misses you're going to have with a smaller pan and a smaller trap. It's going to be hard for an animal to step inside these jaws now and not fire the trap. And I believe Chip's got some videos on YouTube, and I'm going to show a video of the trap with this and setting a stick off towards the jaws, and you can see what happens of why you still don't get any more toe catches with the big pan than you do without the big pan. But it's a really cool thing, and if you're a 550 guy and you want to up the game and the catch with your MB550s, you ought to look at these pans. They are different than the other Expand-A-Pans, I will tell you that, because of the way the trap is made. It's not like the ones that I use on my number three and four long springs, nor is it like the one that I use on my number three Bridger Dogless traps, because the way it's designed, it's just too big of a pain to do that with. My other ones, I just take the bolt out, put the pan on, slide the boat in, and tighten it up. So that is all I have to do with those other expander pans. This one, because the way the trap is made, you're either going to have to rivet it or weld it onto the pan. And it's also going to be a little bit cheaper, I believe, because you don't have the tool and die part with bending ears and lining up holes and all that other type stuff. But if you're into the 550s and you want to take that good trap to a even a higher level than it already is, you got to look at these expander pans, because it looks, besides just looking cool, and sometimes looking cool actually I think helps you make stuff, because you've got more pride in your equipment, and when you're putting it in, it gives you more confidence, and somehow through the cosmic world that we live in, that confidence seems to almost talk to the set and to the animals. It tells them what they need to do. As squirrely as that sounds, it seems to be, because if you put a trap in you don't have confidence in, it doesn't seem to work very well. You know, and the set doesn't have a brain, and the trap doesn't have a brain, and the animal didn't know that you set the trap to catch him, so I don't know why and how all that works, but it does seem to really work. And when you grab a 550 as well as that trap's put together with that expander pan on there, you're dealing with a warrior trap at that point. And I do believe that would give anybody more confidence when they went out and used it. So check them out. I don't know what the price is. You can get them from Jeb at Oki Cable and Trap Supply. I think Chip did a bang-up job of doing this. And I'm going to have a video of doing this. And I've already shot two videos with it, and I keep screwing it up on my new iPad. I've got an iPad. I went to the dark side and got an Apple product, and it's got this editing thing on there, and I'm trying to figure out how to use it. It's a little bit different than what I use when I edit stuff now, but it's a cool thing that because it has an editing program on there, once I figure out how this thing works, and if you're into YouTube videos and different things like that, or you want to show videos for your business or your store or something like that, if you're getting in the trapping industry side, by having an iPad, that once you figure this out, it's really, technology is really cool, you know, to a point, but it can be frustrating with the learning curve, because you can film with it, it's got good audio, it's got good video, and then all I've got to do is hit a button, it goes to YouTube, that I can embed it on a website, and that's eventually what's going to happen once I get this editing done. But you'll see, I'll have a video on here and on Wolfer Nation on YouTube showing this, because it just makes sense to me that since so many of the people use these traps, let's just take them up to warrior status and let them go to battle. Now, what we're going to talk about the rest of the show is going to be more questions. I like doing these type things for the simple fact of these are questions that are coming to me. So it means that people are wanting to know about these. So, and I'm a firm believer that someone that's giving out information sometimes thinks they know what's important, but it may not be, but the person that needs the information knows what they need. So that's kind of why I do this. And I'm not going to say a last name here, but this is from Darren. He's from Minnesota. Back when I talked about the pet food idea, I mean, he's went full bore with this, and I've got to brag on him about this. You know, he's running into some issues, which I knew that would happen, figuring out the packaging and getting the customers and different things like that. But, I mean, he spent a lot of time, and I have no doubt in my mind there's going to be a trapper-owned pet food company in Minnesota before this is over with. And I do believe he's going to do really well with it. But the main thing that's separating Darren from a lot of guys that hear some of the ideas or ideas they have or ideas they hear from me or somebody else is he's taking action. He's taking it out of the chemical process of the brain where you sit around and think to the action, which always leads to something. Even if it's a little bit different than what he thought it would be when it started, because it sounds like it may be, and I'm not going to go into what he's doing are learning on this for the simple fact that he's putting the time in, so I'm going to keep that kind of between me and him. But I've got to brag on him what he's doing. But he does have some other questions that I want to go into really quick. I'd like to store some coon pelts till next year. I think that's a great idea. Let me say that again to guys that are catching coon this year. Listen up to what I'm getting ready to say, because this is a super idea. I'd like to store some coon pelts till next year. I'll listen to you explain your method. I'm looking for something even easier. You know, the shipping film used to wrap boxes together on pallets. It looks like saran wrap. Can I use this to wrap a few pelts together instead of putting them in a bag? What is the main purpose of storing them in the bag? Great question. But before I go to that, let's ask even a better question. Why would we want to store coon pelts this year? Well, and I've got some shows where I go in heavy into this, but guys, when you're going out and you're setting traps and you're burning your energy and you're burning your fuel and you're taking time away from your family because you're putting up your coon and you're doing all that, that is your production and your time. That production and that time, it's up to you to protect that and make sure that it's used at the monetized on the highest velocity and volume that you can get out of that time and that production. The coon market this year, I'm not sure it's going to come up. Now, there was just a sale in Copenhagen, and the wild mink, 100% sale, prices were high, a lot of excitement at that sale. Normally that transfers over to the wild fur market. We'll see. I have a feeling, though, coons are probably going to stay down this year in the country. They're being sold for less than your production to catch them. So if you know that coming up, that is a product that you're spending your time and money on, and you can choose to maximize it or not. And this question is, I'd like to store some coon, but the real question that I want to ask you is, if you're not storing coon, why not? Because there's a big difference in selling coon for $5 or $6 and selling coon for $18. And it may take you a couple of years to get that money back out of going with it. But I want you to think about the world in a little bit different view. Instead of the instant now, I've got to have something right now, it's just easier, I don't want to deal with it, yada, 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 that everybody always says when it comes up to this topic. The difference of selling a coon at $5 and $10 is 100% difference in your production pay. And I bet the same person that says it's not worth it has got a 401k or some type of retirement plan getting him a whole whopping 6 or 7% interest over a 10-year period. So if you got $1,000 worth of coon and you do what the experts on TV tell you to do with their money, after they get done robbing it of all their fees and everything else like that, you're going to make, what is it, $60 on $1,000? Woohoo! You're rocking and rolling, man. Buy a tank of gas with it. I mean, after 10 years, that's $600. Woohoo! I mean, you know, you're going to be buying three houses next month off that money. But if you think of things in smaller terms and scalable to what you can do with them, taking a $5 coon, storing it till it's $10, you can play with all the little numbers you want, but it's very cheap to store fur, especially if you got more, you know, than just a few of them. You can itemize that cost over the whole bunch that you've got. You'll find out that it's pennies on the dollar for doing that. And you got 100% increase off your pay of production. Now, if you put $1,000 in a 401k, and this year you made $2,000 off that 401k, that's 100%. So it's saying a 401k, you give them $1,000, you're going to get the same return as a trapper that puts coon in a bag and stores it for a year or two. That means in a year or two, your 401k, you could go take out $3,000 from your $1,000. And anybody that looks at their statements is going to know that is never going to happen, never going to happen, never going to happen. You can't control that. You can control your production of fur. So if the prices are down on something and you're catching them, you take control over what your production is worth instead of just almost like crawling somewhere and giving it to them and hoping they give you what you want for it. Take control of it. And that's what, to me, the main question of this is that you need to be gathering if you're not thinking about this. You know, Darren, I'm not sure how the Saran Wrap would work. You could look at it in a one way if you had cold storage or you had freezer space and your electricity is not that expensive where you live in Minnesota. It's not here. But if it's not expensive, you could wrap those in Saran Wrap, I guess, to the point where you wouldn't have freezer burn and stuff like that. And most time the freezer burn that's going to come from that is where you've got fat deposits and grease and different things like that. A really dried product that's frozen is not going to be an issue. I don't know how many years you could keep them in a freezer like that and have problems, but I know at bigger fur dealers, they've got cold storage and they roll them in by the pallet and they may keep them there for 5 or 6 years. Because they're going to buy these $2 coon and they're going to hold them till they are $15. And then that's how they're making their money. And trappers should be doing the same thing. But they don't even wrap them in anything besides canvas. And I know that's not airproof. So if you're going to freeze it or cold storage it, I'd say the Saran Wrap couldn't hurt. But I do think, if you just take if you bundle up coon and you wrap them in Saran Wrap, you're going to have air in there. And unless you're going to freeze them, that air is going to oxidize particles of that hide. And that's how you get the yellowing look or the yellowish orange look that if you just take coon and put it in your shop in a couple of years, it changes color, it changes texture. Anybody that knows anything about fur knows that it's stale. Regardless if it's going to make a difference when they run it through a tannery or not, you're not going to get the same amount of money. So that's just a reality we have to work with. The Saran Wrap, I don't see how you're going to take the air out of it. Now, I don't have a walk-in storage unit, and I really don't want to run freezers because I use those freezers for my lure business a lot on different things. So I don't think that's the best thing for me to do, but you could do that depending on how many coon you have and if you've got plenty of freezers that you're not going to need somewhere down the road. The Saran Wrap would definitely protect them some, but they would need to be dried. And regardless if we use the bag method that I talk about or you try to use Saran Wrap, you're just going to have to try and roll the dice with this one. After you scrape the fur, make sure it's super dry. And then you take lacquer thinner that you go down to the hardware store with and you get a little bit on a cloth and you rub them down with a light coat on your rag with lacquer thinner. What that does is that cuts that grease that just kind of comes up out of the skin, and it'll look just like cardboard. And if you do a regular hide without doing the lacquer thinner, even after it looks super dry and you hang it up, grease will come up back out of that skin, but that lacquer thinner seems to pull that out through the high evaporation rate that you get from it, and then it keeps it dry. If you Saran wrapped them, and you could do it where no air could come into those bags with enough of that Saran Wrap, and I'm not sure if it's more cost effective to do that, and you put it in an air conditioned room like I talk about doing, where I'm keeping that about 60 degrees and no light on it whatsoever so mushrooms don't start growing, you might be able to, but I really don't know. But what I like about the bags, it's a little more controlled. And the bags are not that expensive for the amount of fur you can put in them. I get them at Uline. They're like, 3-foot by 4-foot heavy meal clear bags. And I just put the fur in there, and you can get a lot of coons in one of those bags. They're like a Napa bag. And then I use Gorilla Tape and I roll it all down but to one end. I tape that off so it's not going to unravel. And I'm doing it kind of on an angle so it's making sure there's no way air can get into the bag. and I take a shot back, and I suck almost all of the air out. You don't want to suck it down like you, your food saver does on a steak, because there's little stuff on the ears and tails and things like that that'll puncture the bag. You want to get like 90% of the air out. And one thing that I've learned since I've been doing this is if you before you stick the shot back in there, take a couple of hand warmers that are getting ready to be on sale because hunting season's over, and you get them for 50 cents or 75 cents a piece. Break those till they start warming, and that's basically an oxygen absorber. Like if I'm storing rice or beans or stuff in my prepping supplies, you know, I use oxygen absorbers, and I used to buy oxygen absorbers because I didn't realize that a hand warmer was exactly the same thing. And what it does is it causes a corrosive action inside of that bag, and for that to happen, it's got to use oxygen. So if you fill your coons up, and where you've got the corner that you're going to put your shop back, open a couple of activate a couple of these hand warmers, slide them down in that box, take out 90% of the air, quickly pull out your hose, roll that down to where it's airtight, gorilla tape it up, and what little bit of air is in there, it's not going to be super tight to the fur, but what little bit's in there, those oxygen absorbers are going to use. So what you're going to have is an airless environment for your fur, and I don't think you can get that with a Saran wrap. You may if you use enough of it, but I don't know. If you can get it airtight, you could just throw maybe three or four of these oxygen absorbers in there, and it'll work. But if there's any air coming in, you're going to lose what the oxygen absorbers do, which is suck air out of the environment. And then I just put them in a dark room with an air conditioner, and I keep it about 60 degrees, which is only about half the year. And if you're up north, it may not even be a full half a year. It may only be 40 months that you got to worry about running an air conditioner. So it's not that expensive. You're not trying to heat a whole house. In a room, you can actually cordon off a section of a room or an outbuilding or something like that, insulate it with some foam or something. You'd have a couple hundred dollars in it probably if you used your head about it, and you're only going to air condition the space that you need to air condition it with. And then you just let it live. I mean, it stays there. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't cost you anything. But the beauty of doing this, if coons are cheap and I'm catching coons, I don't want to give the coons away. I store the coons. If gray fox drop and I'm catching some gray fox, instead of giving them away at a ridiculously low price, I just go, no problem, I store them. So when I sell fur now, it may be half of this year's catch and a quarter of a catch 2 years ago and part of a catch from a year before that. And I will tell you, if you're going to do this system, you need to try to think about how you're putting these coons in a bag, guys, if you're going to start storing this fur like this. You need to have an inventory on a piece of paper on a computer. I like doing it on paper. And the reason I like doing it on paper, just a regular notebook. We're going to say coon, for example. If I'm somewhere and I'm catching what I know are semi-heavy or heavy coons, those are going to go in a bag, and I'm going to take a magic marker and I'm going to give it a number of, say, 22. So I'm looking at that, and if I look up and I see that, say, Grinwald's, for example, is needing and wanting semi-heavy coons, and that price jumps up, all I've got to do is go into there, I can look on my sheet of paper and go, okay, 22, 26, and 27 are semi-heavy coon. I can take those out and ship them to Grinwald's, because now I'm playing the market to my advantage, just like a stockbroker does, but on way bigger percentages. You know, and I've done this where I've made sometimes 400% off what the local market is willing to bear at the time that I catch the animal. So the product that I sell, I'm looking at things in long term. I'm looking at the actual value that I want to get out of them. And it allows me to get maximum return on what I'm doing. And if other trappers would start doing this, you would see the market start leveling out in some very weird ways. But it'd be very predictable. Because just imagine, if we've got about 30,000 people that listen to Trapping Radio right now. 30,000 people. If 30,000 people started taking their income from their trapping more serious, and instead of giving it away, they looked at it from a business mindset and said, okay, this production, you know, it'd be the same if you were building a widget and the widget market dropped off for whatever reason, the widgets are actually below your cost of production. You don't sell the widget because you've got more than that in it. So you put them on a shelf, but you built your business in a way that you got more than one type of widget. So when one widget goes down in volume, you really crank up the advertising and stuff on the other one and productions on the other ones, and then you sell the ones you can make more money on. So if we had 30,000 trappers just to listen to the radio show, and they average 100 coon apiece or 300 coon or 1,000 coon or whatever that number is going to be, and those guys started doing an inventory of their fur and they stored it for the maximum amount of profit, you would see some drastic changes in the fur market just from locally. So like this year, coon, I don't know how many coons going to be caught. I'm assuming it's going to be down because of all the doom and gloom of people talking about it. Not sure. But the coon market's down. The buyers from China and everywhere, they go to buy them. There's less of them. They need more product. So when they come into the buying on the next section or the next section of their buying of their fur, they're going to know that if they don't spend more money, we're not going to produce more fur. They see that already. I mean, NAFTA has been beating this in their head forever, and it's starting to come around a little bit. So if there was a slowdown in coon and the 30,000 people listening to trapping radio had it stored and all of a sudden there's a spike in coon prices, here's what's going to happen for the people on that listen to trapping radio that follow this advice. They got to go to their notebook. They say, okay, you know, they're still balking on smaller coon, or you know, they're not really topping out what I think they should on the biggest coon, so we're going to take, you know, an average of 32 inches, 30 inches, 33 inches coon. We know what we are from this inventory sheet. In 20 minutes you can go in there, pull those bags and have them on the way to a buyer. So you're dropping, and then all of a sudden you get the max amount of money. And the people that are buying the fur, all of a sudden they get a shot of coon all of a sudden, which may mean that's going to fill their orders, and then they go, well, we don't need them as bad, so they're not worth as much. And then the guys on trapping radio go, no problem, still catching coon. They go back in the bags. So you can hit the peaks of what everything is. And if you look at the way the fur rolls in these cycles, they're not like decades apart, guys. It's way more volatile than that. It's usually 2 to 3 to 4 years max. Coyotes are going to spike, sell your coyotes. Cats spike, sell your cats. Coon spike, sell your coon. Fox spike, sell your fox. But what that's going to mean to the average trapper that listens to this show that follows this advice, it's going to be a boom year every single time that you go to sell. Not a boom year, then three sucky years. A boom year every single time. And if you think of your fur in an inventory manner, you may be catching coon for 3 years before you decide to sell on that spike. And normally what I do when I'm doing this, just to be honest, I keep a conscious decision in my mind that I'm not going to be greedy. If I can make decent money on $16 coons and those coons hit $16, I sell them right then. I don't wait for them to go to 17 or 18 or 20 or hope they go to 25. That type of thinking right there, which happens to guys every year in trapping, they hold them, all of a sudden their legs are cut out from under them. And now they're selling them at half of what they could have got 2 months before, is the reason a lot of people think you can't make money in fur. When an animal meets a price that you're looking for, let's say we're going to take it out of the fur side and we're going to say we have a DVD that you're making for trapping. You're selling that DVD for $30. You know, you could put them on eBay or something, I guess, and hope that everybody bids at $45. But you've got the product. You know what's in the product. You know that you can make a profit off $39, so you sell them for $39 and you're happy. If we start looking at our fur in the same way that is, we're only selling on the highs. Only selling on the highs. And what you'll find out is you may sell a quarter of the fur on the highs and make more than you would if you sold your whole year's fur. I've been doing this for a long time. You know, it's amazing what that matters. Because selling coon, you know, an otter right now, you're probably going to average, realistically, say $50 a piece. Well, $50 is still pretty good money for an animal. But let's say in your mind, you're going to hold out to 100. Well, you may catch 25 otter a year. And then because you don't have anything set in place to take advantage of these swings in the market, all of a sudden, you dump them in 25 times 50 minus commissions and everything else. That's what your income is going to be. But maybe 3 years ago, coon did what they're doing now, and you can sell those coon on a spike for more than they were bringing when you caught them, and you don't have to worry about selling your otter if you want $100 a piece, because you can double your production profit by going to that $100, so you store the otter. If we could do this as a national trapping mindset, oh, son, fur market would be ours. Because the first time they come in and we see that coons are dropped 50%, no more coons go to the market. Trust me, they will buy the coon at what you want them to buy the coon for, up to a reasonable expectation. If just half the trappers would do this in the country, which I don't know if they'll ever start looking at their production that way, the fur buyers would start having a more even keel on a decent price of all fur, because they know if they try to play games, their product for their factories are no longer available. And that'd be a really cool thing for trappers to have. Because they would know, regardless if they wanted to play games and get a bunch of coon for $5 cheaper, they know if they do that, people start pulling them back off the market. And now they don't have coon and they don't make profit. And it'll sell it out, because right now, and it's in this commodity type mindset that is completely out of the producer's hands, it's really screwy. So, you know, I've talked about this before. I really wish some more guys would pay attention to this, because I want other trappers to make more money. And if you're making money with this, don't be a greedy little son of a gun. Show other trappers how to do it, because it's going to help you in the long run. Because it's not hard. Okay, the next question, this is kind of an off-the-wall question. It's, he fishes in Minnesota and Canada for some ice fishing. Water's murky. Glow-in-the-dark jigs work well. I remember you talking about a fisherman using one of your products that glows. Do you have anything for sale that one can dip on the lure so it glows? The ice fishing market is big. This could turn into something. If you have something, I would be interested in helping you out with it. Yeah, it's called Unfair Advantage. It's, I can tell you, like in the Tennessee River at night, catfish go gaga over it because they can see it, you know, a long way off. I mean, I can take a shad, and what I've got to do with live bait, or not live bait, but like a big minnow, which we have down here we can net. I just got a rag, and I just get the slime off of it in a quick thing. And then I will put a dash, you know, just put my finger in the Unfair Advantage, which is very sticky, and run it down the side and throw it out there. No problems whatsoever. In Florida, I used it for shark fishing. Amazing. I mean, you know, most time I was done with my nightly shark quota in just probably an hour. When I went to the Outer Banks with Joey and I was in the Atlantic, and that ocean is an angry ocean, and it comes in from many different directions, and the undercurrent is way crazy compared to what I was used to in Florida. It didn't stay on the cigar minnows like it did in Florida. But I mean, it was getting beat to death. I was having to use 2 ounces of lead just to keep it on the bottom. So you kind of understand what that is. But for ice fishing, I don't see why you couldn't take any lure that you want and just smear a little bit of that on there and drop it down. It's not going to come off in non-moving water or fast-moving water until a fish takes it off. So, you know, you could just dip it in there and sling it out. And it's just unfair advantage. It's what a lot of guys are using from, you know, beaver, otter, cats, fox, stuff like that. So that's what that is. Another question he asks is about the co-op. Guys, co-op's going to happen. I've already talked to people. I've had businesses. I've already had businesses that are not even in the trapping industry. One of them is a shooting sticks. And I have no doubt the co-op's going to happen. And he's wanting to know, when can I send you money? I'm probably not going to get into the gearing. I've already got the web guy, David, who's laying out a groundwork on how to do this. And because it's a little different than I've ever had to do before, so there's some more specifics on the back end of a website that we got to work out, like security, for instance. The videos and documents and podcasts and stuff that I'm going to have just for members of the co-op on the back end of this. So when you get your membership that day, you're going to have minimum of 2 to 3 to 4 times your value given to you right then. And then the cherry on the cake is, like for me, if you're already ordering my stuff, you're going to get a 10% discount on everything. Some other dealers may give you more percent. Some may give you less. It may be free shipping. It may be certain things on certain products. You'll know what all those are on the backside of this co-op. I just think it's a really cool thing to be able to help trappers save money by using the social capital that we have by having so many people that are already listening to Trapping Radio, and companies want to be able to have a way to be in front of those people where they're an asset instead of just like anything else that's out there right now. So there's no doubt in my mind. I'm assuming in my mind that the membership's going to be either $39 or $49 to join up. So you're going to make your money back in spades just off what you buy in trapping supplies already. Plus you're going to have different things that I'm going to make sure that's there, that's way more detailed, that only is going to be for co-op members. And one of the things he asked in here is, because I've asked y'all, if there's things you want that you know I may be a little hesitant of doing just on the open internet, let me know. I'd like you to provide a page full of info on why someone would need control program. And in parentheses is coyotes. Probably what I would do is... I used to have this book that it's color on the covers, is black and white inside. I'd get them printed off, and when I would meet new clients or potential clients, I'd have my card stapled on the front, and then they could take that back. And on every one of these pages, there's a picture of something. You know, it could be a big deer or whatever. And underneath that, it'll talk about fawn recruitment, or it may talk about percentage of deer by so-and-so studies that have shown over and over again that they're losing 70% of their deer per year due to predators. And I had it on turkeys, and I had it on quail and different stuff like that. Probably what I'll do is on the back end of the, for the memberships only, is I'll have that in a PDF format of what I used to give customers with the studies, with the percentages, and the wording that I used, that there was a lot of time involved in getting the wordage right so it would resonate with a landowner. And that way you could take that, maybe modify it to your own specifications, put it in a booklet or a pamphlet form, and have that part of when you go talk to a landowner that's worried about deer, turkey, or quail. You could give that to them because it wouldn't cost you very much money at all. You're not going to be sending these out through mass media or something. And then, see, that's one of those things that I like when people give me what they want to have on there, because that is a cool thing. So if someone is looking, that's the reason I like the back end of a site like this. I really don't want to put that out open internet, you know, where everybody and anybody can start doing it. And I want to give people that want to be part of a co-op to support me and what I'm doing on Trapping Radio something that's a little more top-end type material that they can use and they can go and generate more money for themselves with. So that's a great idea. So that's probably what I'll do, is have that in a PDF format, pull all that together. You know, you wouldn't be able to copy the PDF and put it in a booklet, but what you could do is rewrite it in your own words with the same studies, have your own pictures. You could put it on a book, and I'll even show you what the cover of mine looked like and what the back of it had on there, so you can see exactly what it was, because it was a moneymaker when you put it in their view. And the cool thing about that was it was no more than a paragraph or two per page. So it wasn't like I was asking to read a book. It was just kind of like a kick in the teeth and the nuts over and over again of why they needed predator control. So if there's something else like that you could think about, you could do. Like, one thing I'm already thinking about, if I can do this, is I've got a video series right now that's called Money Making Strategies something. It's 6 hours of me explaining how to make money in the trapping industry. I may actually put that free for download on the back end of this co-op. That's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about doing, but there's no doubt in my mind we're going to have it. And I just got to get through all the back end issues and things like that. And the last question from Darren is, I've been doing some control for coyotes on a sheep farm. Had great success. A lot of traps close together, cutting off all travel ways. If I continue to use the same bait and lure, I educate some coyotes? Will there be some that will figure it out and not get caught? Landowner worries about this. So, I mean, at least the landowner's thinking too. Should I charge and arrive this spring with a new bait and new lures? Of course, I'm thinking about using your brands. If it would be a good test to see if another bait and lure would perform better or not. Yeah and no. Well, I'm going to answer it this way. This is part of what I'm not going to say is probably what's going to be on the back side of the co-op, because I love helping trappers. But at the same time, there's certain things that a person learns through years and years and thousands of dollars that they're uncomfortable by giving out on an open thing like Trapping Radio. So I'm not going to tell you how I look at this, but I may have this on the back end of the co-op because it's valuable information. But I will say that, yes, you do need to change your bait and some new lures. And you know, it could be you went from Federales one time to Gator Bait to Primal Paste Bait, or Federales and Hiawatha bait from Tim Caven to something from Jeff Dunlap to something from O'Gorman, something like that. So if you're going and you're going back and back and back, and it's going to be a continual contract type thing, you would definitely want to change those up. And you'd want to change that up at least for a 2-year block, because you're going to be dealing with survivors after your first campaign. Now, some of the stuff that I've picked up, it goes a lot more in depth on just the lured baits, but it is a system that I finally figured out that made my world a lot easier when I was dealing with places that I was going back to and back to. But I would definitely change the bait, and I would definitely change the lure. But more than just changing the lure, I'm going to be honest with you, Darren. If you're using my stuff right now, I would get away from it on this property 100% for a year or two, which means you're going to have to buy some other lure, and there's a lot of the good lures and makers out there. But the reason I say that is I've got tendencies in my lure, just like every other lure maker out there, regardless if they want to admit it or not. There are certain things through my testing and what makes me warm and fuzzy and what I see animals do that I'm heavy on across the board when it comes to lures and baits. Now, you may go to a different lure maker, and what you'll find out that he's going to have the same preferences and the same things that turn him on that gets him good results that are completely opposite of me. So you may be using two or three of my lures that smell really different to you, but on the back end it's got some same things working for it. And if you're using those same things with those heavy ingredients time after time after time, they will get habituated to it. And what I would do is totally get away from a lure maker for a year or two. And that goes against anybody that's in the lure business to say something like that, but I'm just being honest with you. Because I've back before I had more lures, and I've got stuff that I don't sell that I use because of expense reasons. If I went to somewhere years ago, I may use all my stuff the first time, all of Blackie's blends the next time, and all Old Gorman's the time after that. Because I can smell, but being a lure maker especially, me and Blackie have very different views on predator lures. And O'Gorman was very heavily influenced by Bill Nelson, where the lure styles, his theories I believe in, but his ingredients, I've never went that way because there's so much of that on the market now. So what I would do if I was doing like a 3-campaign contract for somebody, I'd use my stuff, Blackie stuff, or Fox Hollow stuff, or O'Gorman stuff, then I'd go in behind it and I would use someone totally different behind that. And then I would learn which one of those would work in an area like that. And it worked out for me very well. So I hope that answered your question for you way better than I'd ever answered in an email, I promise you. Because of time, we're going to go to our next one. Wow. I didn't think I was going to rant as much on the first stuff. But guys, to me, taking control of your production is to me it's such a shame that people don't do that. Okay, this is from a gentleman from Pennsylvania, Justin, and he's asking me about lure recommendations, stuff like that, and I sent him that in the email. But he did ask, and we've talked about this in the past, since winter, I said, in the sets that you would recommend, what sets would you recommend putting in would be effective? I do a lot of dirt holes, and I've been trying some flat sets, hay sets, and a few pea sets. I'm looking to learn as much as I can as time goes by, and like anything else, learn from my mistakes and to begin really hitting the canine population hard. You know, he talks about, he thinks trapping is a year-round process through trap preparation and scouting and all that. And dude, you're absolutely rock solid when it comes to that. That's absolutely true. What he's having problem with that I can gather from this email, guys, is rain and snow. And I'm going to go and get the snow one out of the question first. If I were going to be playing in snow right now, the only thing I would be using probably would be a hay set, and more than that, probably portable pockets, because the portable pockets can keep me above level at least 10 inches of snow where my tractant and everything is completely out of it. That would be my answer. Now, saying that, when I first started trapping in Alaska, snow conditions are highly different up there than they are here. It's 20 below zero. It was every day. The snow never melted. And it was very different than in the lower 48. Extremely different. More Canadian than down here. So what I did up there, I don't think would work in most of America when you get snow and thaw. Because we were setting traps on top of 7 foot of snow. You know, it very different than what you're going to have. You get a 6 inches of snow when it leaves, or a foot of snow when it leaves, or, you know, it's blowing all the time because there's not a lot of wind in Alaska in the wintertime where I was at in Fairbanks. So I didn't have to deal with that, because I hear guys out in South Dakota and Montana, and, you know, they're talking about snow drifts. You got to shovel your truck through and stuff. Didn't ever have to deal with that. And I don't want to make something up to make me sound like I know more than I know, because when it comes to snow, my response, honestly, the same response I gave him, there's these things that the government puts in with your tax money called roads. And those roads will lead south if you head the right direction. So my response to Snow, and I got this, I believe it was Charlie Dobbins that was making a joke, but I think it was one of the most spot-on things that was ever said in trapping. Don't fight it unless you have to, and go south so you don't have to deal with it. That's my response, because I really don't know enough about it. We get snow here, it's 2 inches deep, it's gone in a week. That doesn't really change anything, you know, besides dealing with frozen traps every now and then. I will say I would figure out ways that I would treat the snow like rain in one instance. You know that it's going to thaw on you, in the lower 48 especially. When that thaws, you're going to have water just like rain, and you're going to probably still have very cold conditions, which is going to cause freezing, which is going to be an issue for you. Try to figure out ways using peat moss and grass clippings and weeds and shredded leaves and different things like that, or wax dirt, where the water from the snow is not going to mess with you. And the reason I think that's important is most of the time those type products, if they stay somewhat dry and they can shed water and you don't stick it in a hole or a valley or somewhere water is going to be running over it when it's melting, you can still be working even when it freezes. If you put dirt back in there and the dirt absorbs the water and then it gets wet and then it freezes, you've got a chunk of ice. And, you know, to me, figure out ways to bed this stuff without using dirt. The power bed method, the way that Albert Simpson uses in Pennsylvania, he can set a trap, like for a hay bale set, on top of the ground. Literally, no digging whatsoever, on top of the ground, and you can't make his trap move for nothing. And you can Google power bed, and he's using spikes instead of wooden pieces. There's actually a book on it, I believe. And he's using nail gutters to do this. And that way, when it's frozen in Pennsylvania, he can put his trap on top of the ground and use hay to kind of cover up the trap. And he's rocking and rolling, and it's not going to make any difference to him whatsoever. Now, that's kind of the direction I would head. When it comes to the rain, though, the flat sets are going to always outproduce the dirt hole sets, because the dirt hole sets get washed out by rain, and you have all these down days. And that really sucks. If you treat it the same as I'm telling you for the snow, and you get away from using as little dirt as possible inside your trap bed, and you're using more natural covers and peat moss, you can handle that rain much better. So a flat set, the beauty of a flat set, if you've got a tree right next to a travelway, and say it's a big gnarly pine tree or something, or an oak tree, sometimes it's as simple as smearing that bait up under some of the bark and setting a trap in front of it. That's how simple a flat set can be. And you can find different ways to protect it with rocks and vegetation and stuff like that, or where you put them so the rain's not going to beat down on it. Your lure's not going to get washed away. And if you treat the trap bed right, where you're not using a bunch of dirt and stuff that freezes when it gets wet, or you can control that pretty easy, now the rain's not that big of an issue either. So that's just my theory of doing it. Now, before we close, I've been using this tool, guys, that I didn't make and I didn't design, but it's a really cool tool. And Freedom Brand makes it. And it'll work for any trap, not just the Freedom Brand traps that I use, but any trap out there. It didn't make any difference. And it's a clean-out tool. And the more I use this thing, you can go to their website at fntpost.com. And you can look at it. It's you know, when you look at it from a perspective of, well, the only thing on there is the bottom part with these little teeth on this half rotation thing, kind of like a half circle. It doesn't look like much, but I'm telling you, you start getting stuff that starts freezing in your dog proof traps, or you're using something like molasses or something that melts like a marshmallow. By this time of year, you've got gunk built up almost to the trigger. And you can sit there, like I've done for years, with a screwdriver and try to pry that stuff out there. If you think about your time, well, this tool, it's made to go past the trigger, And because it's got this little T-handle on it, I can sit there and ream that back and forth and get it down towards the bottom and break all that stuff up really quick. Now, the other place that it's really cool is when you're in gumbo-style mud or something like that. It's got a little pick on the back, and I've got some videos that I'm going to put up on this not too long on YouTube. Harry showed me how to use it at a convention, and then when I went out and used it, I mean, it's slicker than anything I've ever used for a dog-proof trap. So if you got a bunch of mud packed around your trap and you're sitting there trying to use a screwdriver and it doesn't fit in all these little bitty tiny places, Quaid up at QSR, when they designed this thing, he thought of about everything. So you're using one part of it in the tube and you're using another part of it on the outside of the trap. And then on the big chunks, you can use what you used in the tube to get the big chunks of mud out. And you can clean everything up really, really quick. But the biggest advantage I see from a time-saving space, it's towards the end of the season. If you've put away your dog-proof traps, what most people do is they come out and they look at them sometime in July or August. And you've let that nasty stuff melt and thaw inside that tube and dehydrate and everything else. And you've basically got hard candy in the bottom of that trap. And trying to beat it out and chisel it out with a screwdriver, it's no fun. It sucks. This tool, you can stick it down in there and you can use it. And it doesn't matter, like I said, whether you're using the FB 1 and 2s like I do, or using Z-traps or Dukes, it works on all of them. And it's not expensive. And I would recommend, if you do a lot of DP trapping, buy a couple of them. Because if you do lose one and you want to use it, you're going to be very sad that you lost it and don't have it, because you're going to get kind of addicted to how easy this thing works. Go to F&T Post and you can check it out. It's not the most sexiest thing in the world to be buying a clean-out tool for dog-proof traps until you're cleaning out the dog-proof traps. I thought I was going to get many more questions, but guys, that didn't happen. It's been about an hour since we've been talking to each other. So it's January. We're supposed to get some snow tonight. I don't know if that's going to happen. I know Northeast right now is supposed to get plastered with snow. So be safe when you're out there. Don't get so much equipment out, guys, that if you got such bad weather, you can't get to it. You know, keep all that stuff in mind when you're out there trapping and just enjoy being out there. And whatever you do this week, make sure that you're doing what the beast does. And y'all have a good week.
Hey, it's a party over here. Bring your people to the other side. Take them back roads. You might want to bring your other ride. Big chrome wheels, custom paint. That ain't cutting it. Navis with the mud flaps. We be on some other shit. Couple hundred cattle and a pond. Southern cat, you can't tell me nothing about barbecue and both of that. Meet me in the middle, tea, and show you how we crop it up. Hang it in a bar, let it cure to that proper stuff. Chattanooga shine got me feeling like super smoke. Take another shot, hit the perk, now we super blown. I be in the chicken coop, who's going chicken hunting? Catch me on the YouTube if you wanna learn you something about the simple Southern country boy out of Tennessee. Hit me up on MySpace if you wanna get at me. Right around the corner, there's a perfect place for you and me. We all call it home, but you can call it Tennessee. Rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, yours or mine. Hey, either way, we just kicking it in Tennessee. Rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, yours or mine. Hey, either way, we just kicking it in Tennessee. Now if you can't shoot it, race and sleep with it or eat it. Down here in Middle Tennessee, you just don't need it. Rabbit trapping 112 gauge in the other hand. And if you don't love this country boy, find another man. Need me a mid 10 thoroughbred chick that can eat a Granny Smith apple through a picket fence. Make me dream about it, won't quit. 4 days she's fine as a frog hair split. 4 ways fresh cut like a hayfield. Know what I mean? Have you ever seen a country boy so damn clean? John Deere tractor, four-wheeler or a backhoe. Working on a farm walk, rolling down a back road. Looking looking for a country gal with a lot of street smarts. Spend a couple thousand of my money down at Walmart. Thick legged, big booty, sweet like tea. Baby girl, let's go carve our initials in a tree. Then we're rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, it's yours or mine. Either way, we just kicking it in Tennessee. Rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, it's yours or mine. Either way, we just kicking it in Tennessee. Big ass white boy, boss of the dirt roads. Fruit, wine, and sticky, I can get it by the truckload. Sipping on fire water, smoking on a hog leg. Rubbing on a southern belle, chewing on a frog leg. About 100 youngins at the barbecue at noontime. After the sunset, it's straight to the moonshine. Single barrel, shoddy fishing pole, and a coon hound. Capable of turning any city to a boomtown. Smooth Tennessee cat, the type that you love to hate. Slick as goat spit, tough as $2 pig steak. Dogs on the porch, coveralls on the clothesline. I be taking care of things, tell me when it's go time. Better come correct when you step on my grass. Let your mouth write a check that your ass can't cash. Round up 100 honkies with just one whistle. With a buzz like that, I don't even need a pistol. Rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, it's yours or mine. Either way, we just kicking it in Tennessee. Rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, it's yours or mine. Either way, we just kicking it in Tennessee.